All right. Well, welcome back to another week of the Luke Miller podcast. For those of you who are listening, we've been going through this kind of mini series in a podcast on what worship is. And worship came through the conversation of what prayer looks like and the different forms of prayer. And for the last couple of weeks, I've been dangling a carrot in front of everyone, however many that may be, mostly my relatives maybe, that are listening to this, of bringing on our worship pastor, Rachel Jackson, and us talking about music and the music component side of worship. And so I have delivered. I can only dangle that carrot so many times. So Rachel is with us today, and I thought it would be good for us to have a conversation, not only about some of the things we talked on last week, which is what is the makeup of music and worship in just regular Sunday mornings, but also what does it look like, more importantly, in Scripture, as we use that to lay the foundation for what Sundays look like. So that is my lengthy introduction to say welcome, Rachel.
Thanks for having me, Luke. Okay, what episode is this?
This is episode 19.
Wow.
I know. This whole thing started as a way for Sunrise to get to know me a little bit back in February, and then COVID hit, and then I was able to just start preaching, and they got to know me a bit this way, so I just kind of turned this into a weekly, midweek devotion kind of thing. So, so you've been at Sunrise for what, 6 years now?
Almost seven.
Almost seven, oh, there you go. And so you've been kind of part of everything from choir to, Sunday music to the big productions that go on with our seasonal events to lately, as you and I've talked about, the wonderful
of online services.
Yes, TV producers. Yes. So we share that in common. Last week, I talked about the idea of when we look at Scripture and we see it in a few different points or a few different places, even is this topic of, while worship styles are not, we don't see it referenced in places, we see what needs to be incorporated into worship, and part of it is the Psalms, right, where corporate and individual. The other is these hymns, not the hymns that we probably define it, although a lot of hymns are very much in the template, and hymns being songs or poetry that are all about giving God the glory and the worthiness of God. And then finally, the spiritual songs, which is all about, again, giving God the glory, but also include testimony of what God has done in the life of the individual. And so I was wondering, I think the question for you is really, how do you see this, from song selection to conversations about worship style to what goes into the process of defining, these kind of three categories. For you, for Sunrise and just in general, and kind of your whole philosophy on that. I know that is a very broad question.
Wow. How much time do we have?
Yeah. Right. So 2 minutes.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. So hymns and spiritual songs, two different kind of categories, but in our world, we define hymns often as a style of music, not as a content related.
Yes, totally.
And
hymns, same. because like you said, in fact, I was going to say earlier, the hymn style, there are a lot of songs written in the hymn style now. There's been a lot of songs written in the past in the hymn style that have absolutely nothing to do with the hymn description in the Bible. And then there's plenty that are, some classics like A Mighty Fortress. And then you got a song like Be Thou My Vision, which is more of a prayer written in a hymn style. You know, so there's lots of different things like that out there.
Yeah, and I mean, with more modern music, do you think that it takes on more of that spiritual songs kind of category where it's this cross between a template? I mean, you and I were talking about this even before we started recording, and then realized we should be recording, is like a lot of songs today give testimony to who mm-hmm. God is, but may lack out that key component of giving God the glory or even mentioning God, you know, in modern worship, right? And
I think a lot of modern some modern worship songs are not actually really modern worship songs. They're more just pop songs that have a Christian bent that become that come into the church because they are basically an homage to Jesus as lover versus Jesus as someone to be worshipped or a testimony or that kind of thing. So it's really a lot more of like that personal devotion, but it's been brought into a corporate situation, which is really unique to, I think, more of this modern era versus in the past. But then there's also the component of actual worship songs that are spiritual songs that are out there giving testimony of what God has done in people's lives. So there is a really big mix out there right now, and a lot of different opinions on these things.
Yeah, you don't say in music and in the church. And so like one of the things that I've been trying to that we've talked about in this podcast over the last couple of weeks is how music is important to worship, but it's not, you know, the fundamental component of worship. It's that testimony of Christ on the cross. It's I don't know the way of saying it. It's not preeminent or anything like that. It's, you know, the work on the cross is the most important. And if music can help exemplify this and we can use this in a corporate setting, then that's really where music comes in. I'm trying to remember it because it's a quote from Martin Luther that says, you know, at the sound of music, the devil flees, just like with good theology or something along those lines, right? Like, and Martin Luther puts this picture of theology as being important, but theology combined with music is just right up there as well. But yet we see ourselves. I mean, we have to be kind of careful with we can love the melody, right? And we can even love the song. But I don't know how many times I've heard a song and been like, I'm not, like, I'll be humming it a few days later. But when I look at the words, I'm like, ooh, like, that's not going to be a Sunday morning.
Yeah, just because it has a good hook doesn't necessarily mean it's good for worship. Yeah. Sometimes it's just good to listen to on the radio.
Yeah, right? And, yeah, so, I mean, the thing that I look at is, and I teach this when I do teach hermeneutics up at Bible colleges, is I'll play the game of Taylor Swift or worship song, or One Direction and worship song, and of just these modern day bands, and then also lyrics from songs that are sung in churches around the world, and is there a way to notice the difference, right? Which mm-hmm. should be probably concerning. But Why don't you give us a picture of, for you, of what goes into like the song selection when it comes to music and worship on Sundays?
Okay, well, I'm going to start with a quote by J.S. Bach, and he's a good Lutheran from the past. The aim and final end of all music should be none other than the glory of God and the refreshment of the soul. So those are two things, the glory of God and the refreshment of the soul. I think one of those does really well on Sunday morning, and as a component together can do really well, but just refreshment of the soul, maybe that by itself is not enough for Sunday morning corporate worship.
Oh, totally. You know, and I'll let you continue, but I have to say that last week I actually mentioned Bach because I had said at the end of most of his scores you see those initials, SDG, Soli Deo Gloria, you know, God be the glory. And at the beginning, Jesus help us, you know, or JJ, right? And which is super, I mean, this ties in perfectly. I mean, and we didn't even discuss this.
No, we didn't. Yeah. But he also did write a ton of stuff that was just for the refreshment of the soul, including a cantata entirely devoted to coffee.
I did not know that.
The coffee cantata. You can look it up, people.
Yeah, I feel like there's probably a lot of people out there who've written power ballads while driving in their cars to get coffee.
Right, exactly. Yeah, for Sunday mornings, you know, I look at a lot of different things. When, the big thing is I you know, since the service that I do is mostly a blended service, we call it classic because we do older and newer songs in a approachable style to multi-generations versus a modern, which is going to be very much almost like a copy of what's happening on the radio. So I look back at different decades, different literally centuries of music, and pull out what I think has had the staying power. It's really easy to get the staying power from the centuries, because the ones that didn't have the staying power you can't even find anymore. And then do some of those, you know, some of those old hymns, and they can be reworked. Some of these have even been reworked into new melodies. And then from the last 50 years, though, or 40, we have a big medley that we do at our church every so often. That is all the years that Sunrise has been around. So it's 45 years of worship music, and we pick up highlights from each decade. And some of them have had some staying power. A lot of them, even ones from the 40s and 50s, things that we would call hymns now, but they were really the pop songs of their day in the hymn world. And some of them don't have musical staying power. You listen to them and it sounds really, really dated. It doesn't have that classic sound. And I'm talking about things from even 10 years ago or 20 years ago, not necessarily from 50. And then others kind of have a sound that just stands the test of time. It's kind of like watching an old 70s or 80s movie and go, oh yeah, that still holds up. Or, oh man, can't believe I used to like that movie. It's so bad. You know, but I'm speaking only from a musical standpoint. Because if it's really dated musically, it's going to not work out well for a multi-generational group. So that's the musical aspect that I look at. The second aspect, of course, is the lyrics.
Yeah.
You know, and what's involved with lyrics. Are those lyrics first scripturally sound? If they're iffy, is it more of a poetic kind of analogy, and is that okay? Or is it just blatantly just wrong? Mm-hmm. You know, there's some of those. And there's some hymns out there that I will not do unless I have, you know, someone saying you must do this hymn, because I have the same issues with some of those. And, of course, we know plenty of modern songs that are kind of on that scale as well. But, yeah, looking at the lyrics, deciding whether or not it is, yeah, is it a psalm, is it a hymn, is it a spiritual song? If it's none of those, if it's more of a personal devotion song, is that something that is helpful to the congregation at this point? Is it something that everybody can relate to? And then, of course, the last thing is it singable? Yeah. I mean, there's so many songs that are out there that are not singable, and bands come out with these songs, and then they put them on in congregations, you know, because, oh, I really like that song, it's really cool. And then they play it in the congregation. The congregation, after like three turns with it, are just still going, wait, what? It's just, it's not made for that. Or it has, you know, two octave jumps.
That's what I was going to say. Like, this two octave range. I totally get that. Because I have sat in my car and I've hummed along to, like, or just had in my mind the melody of a song, and I've said to, you know, one of our worship leaders, oh, we need to do this on Sunday. And then when I start singing it on Sunday, I'm like, oh, I can't sing this. Like, there's no way. Like, I mean, I wouldn't say my vocal talents are anything to be desired, but I think of, you know, I still don't mind belting it out on a Sunday, but I'm not able to jump three octaves, you know, and...
Right. And a lot of the worship songs nowadays are written, you know, and performed by high tenors that have these huge ranges, and they don't translate to the congregation well unless there's modifications made to them. They're done in a lower key, that kind of thing. So that's the tricky part with modern worship is they're... Even though people want the exact radio version in a lot of modern worship, it isn't necessarily the best thing for a congregation because it's just not attainable to join in, because that's my last component of all of this is participation is necessary. And if people are not participating in worship, what does that mean? Is that just voyeuristic worship? Is voyeuristic worship actually worship? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I love that. I mean, I love it when there's those moments where, like, you can step away from the mic and you just hear the congregation with one voice, you know, singing. And there's something so cool about that, because I always just picture the royal psalms and the hymns of the nation of Israel and just imagine, you know, what it would have been like in, like, as a nation sings together. Which is a cool picture to, you know, fathom, especially in our day and time right now. But also, like, there's this picture also of in Second Chronicles where the music and the worship is so genuine and profound that it says, you know, smoke filled the whole temple, and the priests weren't even able to continue the service because, like, God was there, right? And so, that's probably another podcast, another day too of looking at this. Like, I mean, I'm sure we've all arrived at church some days and we're singing a song and we're like, I just don't know if I can belt this one out, right? Like, I'm not sure I'm in my heart's in that place where, you know, or where I'm struggling and what that looks like. Yet we see so many laments in the Psalms of mm-hmm. both corporate and individual, right? Where, which I think is, cool to look at. Now, for me, when we talk about kind of that, I guess we could call it the comfort food worship songs. You know, those ones that we grew up with, where we, you know, even however many years removed from worship or from singing it, if I played it, I would just go right back into my glory days. For me this is when I learned how to play drums. So, you know, I hear Shine Jesus Shine or Shout to the Lord with about five different key changes in it and like a little Petra sprinkled in here or there. Right? Totally. I'm in my zone, right? Like, this is like for that. And I think we all kind of have this comfort food, yet I have to tell myself at the same time, like, I can't just keep on playing Shine Jesus Shine or Shout to the Lord over and over. And, like, what does moving forward or progressing even with worship look like? And I was going to segue into this, too, by kind of this historical look at what worship was.
Yeah, I think that that's where you take, you know, those few songs that made it past the decade, you know, and mm-hmm. and you keep those in the rotation, you know, to for honor, but also because they're good songs. Those other songs, you know, I mean, I think of the one I knew when I was, I don't know, like 3 or something, and it was old then. It's called Pass It On, you know. It only takes a spark to get a fire going.
I know it. Yeah.
You know, everyone would sing that song at my church. I just would just be like, oh, yeah, we're singing Pass It On. And I was like 5 or 3 or something. It was just like my favorite. As you know, honestly, it's because I loved s'mores, and the idea of, you know, having fires around and having s'mores made me happy. But I didn't know the song. I think that there's still, all that music is still available. You can still find copies of it. So you can have those songs as your personal worship songs if you're from a, you know, if those songs are really meaningful to you and you're not getting them on a Sunday morning. It doesn't mean they don't exist anymore. It means you have access to them. We're just not going to sing them all together, yeah. You know, and I think that's a really good thing. I know there's also sometimes there's groups that get together that came from the same decade, and they all sing their songs together. And that's cool because, I mean, that's what happens in my generation is I go to certain concerts, you know, like, I don't know, Ben Folds or someone else, and I look around, I'm like, oh, man, everybody here's my age. I didn't realize this is such a generational thing, this particular band, you know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny.
I had no problem when I was doing youth at the church up here. Like, my road trip song when I was in youth, when we would start any road trip with the youth group growing up, was always Petra, Beyond Belief. And I still remember it, right? It's on their track, or on their CD cassette, track 4. And... I had no problem force feeding that to the youth. I was dry, like, now when I became a pastor, and just, you know, you will like this song and you will pass it on from one generation to the next because it is the way, you know, kind of thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. This is the classics. This is where you come from.
Totally. Totally. Air guitar, everything in it. So,
oh my goodness.
So, like, we already knew we were going to fall into this category where we would start talking and an hour later would go by. But I think, like, what I was going to kind of finish with, knock on wood, is this, like, so looking at the history of kind of music in the church and just this brief summary of it is kind of like, I mean, worship is so contentious in so many different ways, like style, you know, of it. You know, right in the early first church, it was kind of anything goes, you know, worship God, really following, the Ephesians passage of songs and hymns and spiritual songs and teaching and admonishing one another, and that being worship. And then all of a sudden, around 300 AD, you see this introduction of, like, professional singers, professional musicians, and it stays like that for the whole, until Martin Luther comes along and a Protestant Reformation brings about this wild guy who brings in the organ, right? The organ of all things, right? A worldly music, documented, right? Of this, just like, right. Why are you bringing the world into the church with the organ?
Right.
Which is
because everything had been a cappella before that.
Yeah. Right.
Or early times where they would use, of course, stringed instruments and that kind of thing. You know, the psalm time. But I was coming out of the Hebrews. You know, not as much out of the Christians.
Yeah. Oh, and totally. But yeah, so was Martin Luther the writer of A Mighty Fortress?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, bringing in that modern new song with an organ, you know, seemed...
And the roof stuck.
I know, right?
Crazy in those cathedrals. It would be incredible.
Totally. And then here's the thing that, as I was looking at this too, is a couple hundred years later... a guy by the name of Isaac Watts comes along, some 15-year-old and was tired of the old stuffy music in the church that that Martin Luther had written. And so his dad challenges him to write something, to give us something better. If you want to complain about it, write something better, is kind of how the story goes. And out of that comes Joy to the World and When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, right? Again, modern worship. So,
and you know that When I Survey is quite a toe tapper.
Yeah. Oh, I know, right? I mean, who knows, like, what would have been happening in those cathedrals that Sunday when he busts out those. And so, like, I mean, and you can go through the history, and I won't go, I feel like this would be a great kind of Jimmy Fallon-esque, a brief history of hymns or church music kind of
right.
synopsis, and maybe that's a challenge for you and the worship.
Well, I will interject, though, because I'm talking to a drummer and I'm also married to a drummer, that the organ, you know, that happened later with lots of other instruments, and the biggest one, of course, being having drums in the church, especially mm-hmm. on stage. And I believe you have a story about that.
Yes. I've referenced it quite a few times, me being the first drummer. And actually, the pastor's wife was the piano player, and the drums were right behind the piano. And I think she was trying to be nice, but it was just very – I know she was trying to be nice, but because there was, like, no earplugs that people were wearing to keep down the sound of the drums, she would wear this giant Russian fur hat in church to cover her ears because the drums were too loud. And, oh, man, it's like, yeah, so I definitely, you know, resonate with that world of drums being introduced to church and what went on through that. But I think the point of, like, all of this is when I look at the history of music and how it has progressed, I honestly don't think that this is, like, the worship wars that we, you know, you would hear about and the style of music. Like, I really think that this is more of a battle between, in many ways, us in society, Satan and self, right? Like, it's if I can create conflict in any way, like, I really believe that, you know, I mean, we know God wins, but we also know Satan will try and trip us up at any point. And so I see it not as a worship war, but as very much spiritual warfare of this is a way to trip up church. And because we've only looked at the tiniest little bit of stuff. I mean, there's so many more time periods between drums and Isaac Watts that something new was brought in, right? And that was also contentious, right? And so I think that, you know, looking at this, especially within the context of church, is I always ask myself, you know, when I'm 70 years old, what is going to be the style of music, or, like, what is going to be the thing that I'm going to take issue with music in church? You know, I want to say that I'm not, but I always wonder, like, what might it be in 40 years or 30 years of worship? And I can only pray that I am like this one lady that attended our church. She was in her early 90s at the time, and we had brought in a band that had performed at a youth conference up here, and, like, it was loud. Like, I mean, it was loud on that Sunday morning, and as I'm walking out, I'm just like, oh, Mrs. Hoffman, like, I'm sorry, that was like louder than normal or whatever. And she just looks at me without even, you know, thinking about it, and just says, oh, I just turned off my hearing aids and it was the perfect volume. And I'm like, I hope I'm as cool as you when I'm, you know, that age, whatever worship looks like. It's, you see people around in corporate worship, and, you know, I don't know if it's going to be, you know, oh, holograms of Phil Wickham, you know, or like whatever it may be in 60, well, 30 years.
Yeah, but. And so much of it's attitude. Honestly, there are people that have their preferences, which always reminds me of the 90s worship song, It's All About You. Mm-hmm. but they forget the last word, Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. Of course, have our preferences, just like we, you know, I mean, just thinking about what's going on in our world right now, you know, we have our preferences of how we want to respond to what's going on. We also have certain directives we are supposed to follow, you know. So in a weird way, that's almost like worship, where we need to put aside our preferences and do what we're supposed to do. So with worshiping in music, it's just like you were talking about with the Royal Psalms. Mm-hmm. People, pilgrims, would be working their way to Jerusalem to worship. And as they enter the gates, they start chanting and singing all together. They probably weren't their favorite songs. They probably had lots of other songs, but they knew they must honor the holy city that they were going to right then and worship God as they entered. They chanted together. They sang together. So it's corporate worship is so different than preferences. It has to do with a body coming together and doing this together. And it reminds me of Nancy and Gary Craver, shout out. Woot, woot. Mm-hmm. They are always going to both services that we when we have two different styles because they just wanted to worship more, you love know. That. And there's a whole bunch of people from lots of generations going to both services because we have preferences for people, and you know we have young families at first, young families at second, older people at first, older people at second. It didn't seem to matter too much because people have their different preferences, and we do have that option where we're at. But the fact is, the point of all of this is that we're coming together to worship, and it doesn't have to do anything with us or our preferences or our egos.
Yeah, no, I will give a wholehearted amen to that. It's, you know, it is a fun little fact, which you probably already know, and I may have even referenced it in a sermon at some point, but like when you talk about the pilgrims coming to Jerusalem and just the way that Jerusalem is situated, which is kind of like the shape of a bowl, and with the old city being right at the bottom of that bowl, and all the hills like Mount of Olives and the hills all around it, like you would come over the hill to Jerusalem from whatever direction you were coming from, and like the moment you would crest over that hill, you'd be able to hear everything, right? Like you. Like the valley and that bowl would be filled with song. It's a natural kind of parabolic mic almost, with the temple as its as the bottom, you know, of the focal point, right? Which is super cool because as people would be coming over and would be singing, it would just amplify everything even more, right? And I mean that in and of itself is just kind of this cool picture of what, you know, just genuine corporate worship should look like and sound like.
And just hearing the din of the city mixed with all the music, I mean, I'd probably start weeping.
I know, right?
Overwhelming, you know?
Yeah. Cool. The closest I've ever seen the city to that while we lived there was on Palm Sunday. And you'd just have thousands upon thousands of Christians who were in Jerusalem. They'd make sure they were in Jerusalem for Palm Sunday if they were visiting Israel. And they'd make their way over and follow the path kind of that Jesus would have taken. And they're just shouting and singing. And like we were honestly probably about, from where they came over on the Mount of Olives, we were two hills over on a place called French Hill, which is about, I don't know, like 5 kilometers away, and so 3 miles away. And you could hear everything. Like, we just sat out on our balcony, and you could hear the city, right? And it was super, and that's just one small chunk of the city, right? So, yeah.
There's so much power in that, too. I mean, you think about the choirs in the Old Testament and how they would lead the soldiers into battle. you know, with their chanting and singing praises to God, and
yeah.
people would flee. They're just like, what? This is crazy. Where are these yeah. people?
Right? You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is, it's powerful, and I think it's, you know, it's powerful even more than anything if it's genuine, right? Like you can get caught up in the feeling of the music, but it's the words, like the, right, we started off with is like Luther saying, you know, about the music and the theology, you know, you combine that together and you've got something so powerful. So I should, our 20 minutes has passed probably 20 minutes ago.
So
yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe I might split this in two. We should have had an intermission. So thank you for this. I've loved this conversation, and I know we could both go on forever. In fact, fun fact to finish with, in conclusion, so that gives me 6 more minutes. So you were the first of the pastoral team that I talked to at Sunrise when I was going through the job process. And so not even when I got into Sacramento to visit, but you and I talked on the phone to set up the meeting for when we were in Sacramento. And so we talked in probably the way that I know the way that most of our conversations have started, which is, do you have 5 minutes? And I remember that because I was on the balcony of my cabin at the camp where I was speaking, and we were setting this up, and then it was over an hour that we talked, and as I was hanging up, I was walking into the chapel to walk straight up on stage because we had talked for so long on this, and even when we met at the restaurant when I arrived in Sacramento, you were going to be late for your flight. I was going to be late for my next meeting, but the conversation, like, so we can talk about this for hours, I know.
Yeah, worship and, yeah, worship.
Just everything.
Yeah, worship. It's for both of us, I think. I think we're both passionate about worship.
Totally. And just seeing it in its, yeah, all of its forms. So I appreciate you just being a part of this today and being a part of this conversation and probably bumping up my viewership, hopefully. but let me just pray and then we'll finish up.
All right.
God, I just thank you for today. I just thank you that we can talk about worship and just what it looks like when we have genuine worship in whatever style it is, but what it has to look like and be composed of and how it can be genuine. And God, that so much of where we hear of conflict in church revolves around music style. But God, we acknowledge that it's not about the style, and so much of that is just spiritual warfare of Satan trying to trip us up. So we ask for protection as we seek to have this genuine worship, and we ask for wisdom as we choose songs, as we seek to worship you as individuals and as a corporate body wholeheartedly, that you'd be glorified, that your testimony of what you've done in our lives would be made known. And so we just thank you for this conversation that we've had today. We pray these things all in your name. Amen.